Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Vayanam namaskritcham nanam chayavam narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam dhato jayamudirayat nasapra yeshu abadrishu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati utama shloke bhakti bhavati naistiki. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 13th chapter, 45th text, translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Sa,
sa,
vai,
vata,
Prashtamatis,
Prashtamatis,
Vaishate,
Vaishate,
Ya,
Ya,
Paramanam,
Paramanam,
Param,
Param,
Para,
Para,
Paramana,
Paramana,
Yadyoga,
Yadyoga,
Mayaguna,
Mayaguna,
Yoga Mohitam,
Yoga Mohitam,
Vishwam,
Vishwam,
Samastam,
Samastam,
Bhagavan,
Bhagavan,
Videhi,
Videhi,
Shah,
Saiva
Bhata Rashtamatis Tabai Sate
Saiva
Bhata Rashtamatis Tabai Sate Karmanam Paramapara Karmanam Samastam Bhagavan Videhi Sham
Vishvam
Samastam Bhagavan Videhi Sham Savaivata Brashtam Atista Vaishate Karmanam Paramapara Karmana Yad Yoga Maya Guna Yoga Mohitam Vishvam Samastam Bhagavan Videhisham Savaibhata Vrashtam Atista Vaishyate Kamanam Parama Parakamana Yad Yoga Maya Guna Yoga Mohitam Vishvam Samastam Bhagavan Videhisham
Vishvam Samastam Bhagavan Videhisham
Vaibhata Vrashtamatista Vasyate
Vaibhata Vrashtamatista Vasyate
Karmanam Parama Parakarmana
Savaivata Vrashtamatista Vaishate
Kamanam Param Apara
Sadhajis. Eshate, desires. Ya, one who. Karmanam, of activities. Param, limit. Apara karmanam, of one who has unlimited activities. Yat, by whom. Yoga, mystic power. Maya, potency. Guna, modes of material nature. Yoga, mystic power. Mohitam, bewildered. Vishvam, the universe. Samastam, in total. Bhagavan, O Supreme Personality. Videhi, just be pleased to bestow. Sham, good fortune. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. O Lord, there is no limit to your wonderful activities. Anyone who desires to know the limit of your activities is certainly nonsensical. Everyone in this world is conditioned by the powerful mystic potencies. Please bestow your causeless mercy upon these conditioned souls. Repeat responsively, O Lord, there is no limit to your wonderful activities. Anyone who desires to know the limit of your activities is certainly nonsensical. Everyone in this world is conditioned by the powerful mystic potencies. Please bestow your causeless mercy upon these conditioned souls. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Mental speculators who want to understand the limit of the unlimited are certainly nonsensical. That's unlimited with a capital U. Every one of them is captivated by the external potencies of the Lord. The best thing for them is to surrender unto Him, knowing Him to be inconceivable. For thus, they can receive His causeless mercy. This prayer was offered by the inhabitants of the higher planetary systems, namely the Janatapas and Satchalokas, who are far more intelligent and powerful than humans. Vishvam Samastam is very significant here. There are the material world and the spiritual world. The sages pray, quote, both worlds are bewildered by your different energies. Those who are in the spiritual world are absorbed in your loving service, forgetting themselves and you also. And those who are in the material world are absorbed in material sense gratification and therefore also forget you. No one can know you because you are unlimited. It is best not to try to know you by unnecessary mental speculation. Rather, kindly bless us so that we can worship you with causeless devotional service. Om Aginati Minam Dasya Gananjana Sarakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Jena, Tasmai Sri Guru Venam Nasri Chidam Ravistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale, Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Kiroti Vachala. It's interesting that Prabhupada mentions that even in the spiritual world, the beings forget Krishna. Because we think that in the spiritual world, we'll always remember Krishna. And another message from this verse is that the sages are praying, bestow your causeless mercy upon these conditioned souls. They want, everyone who is a devotee also wants, especially the great sages and sages, they want to see everyone go back to the spiritual world where they can always remember Krishna and not forget Krishna. They want to achieve success for this Ekapad Vibhuti, this part of the creation, this part of the whole universal situation that is designated as a prison house. They want to alleviate the suffering out of their great compassion for the conditioned souls. They're extremely desirous at every moment. How can the conditioned souls be liberated? This is one of the desires of Krishna. When we talk about devotional service, what does it mean to serve the deity, to offer him a fan, a lamp, to offer him water and a handkerchief, to blow the conch shell, to make beautiful clothing and beautiful offerings for the deity? These are greatly pleasing to Radha Gokula, Nanda, Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman, Gornitai, all the deities. They're very pleased. And deity worship is considered very important, very essential. When Dhruva Maharaj was meditating in the forest, he was advised by Narada Muni to create a deity, even if he couldn't create one out of beautiful marble, just out of earth, a deity could be created. Our deity can be worshipped in the mind when there's no other facilities to worship the deity. It can be worshipped through mediums like wood and paint and stone and rocks and jewels and many other things, and in the mind. Now, part of worshipping the deity in the mind is fulfilling the desires of the deity, because the deity wants certain things done. Krishna has desires. He's not a statue. He's not an impersonalist. He's not someone without a mind or a force, but he has desires, he has activities, he has paraphernalia, he has pastimes, he has friends, he has amazing activities that are so amazing that they can never be known, as is being intimated in this verse. No one can ever know the extent of them. But nonetheless, he writes in his books that one should serve. One should serve him. And one should not only serve him by personal service like we were mentioning, but also serve him by bringing more conditioned souls back to him. Yahidam paramam guyam. He says in the end of the Bhagavad Gita that this is the thing which makes him happiest, which makes the devotee most dear to him. Let's put it that way. What makes a devotee dear to Krishna? Well, if he advances the cause of Krishna consciousness and brings more people back to the spiritual world, or brings more people into the service of Krishna, even here in the material world, Krishna is very pleased. So that's one of the ways in which Krishna is served. It's one of the ways in which we render service, and we call it devotional service, and that translates into preaching activities. This whole movement is based on preaching activities, satisfying the Supreme Lord by preaching activities, by desiring like the sages, bestow your causeless mercy upon these conditioned souls. We were reading in the previous verse about how the mercy of Krishna was distributed by the sprinkling of water from the hairs of Varahadeva. Just that little sprinkling of water is considered great, great mercy. And it's the same, actually, as the Ganga, or the Ganges water, which is transported from the spiritual world, sometimes this material world. That water is very sacred because it touches the toe of Vishnu, and Vishnu, Lord Vishnu, as Vamana, pierced the cover of the universe, then that flowed through the Ganga flowed through and became great mercy. So everybody is actually in need of this mercy, but not everybody knows it. So here there's a distinction being made between wanting to understand, trying to figure out the limit, the extent of the wonders of Krishna, to know his mind. But actually everybody, as is indicated, is dependent upon the mercy of the Lord. Even those who are externally involved in the material energy. Mano ratena sati davato, but he has described that one who cannot engage in devotional service directly, as yasti bhaktir bhagavati kinchana, he will necessarily, harava bhaktasya kuto mahaguna, not possess the qualities of the devotees, of the demigods, and must therefore then be engaged in the external energy of the Lord. There's so much external energy of moving everything in this material world, especially in this age of Kali. It is being driven by the external energy, by the desire of the conditioned soul to be independent from Krishna, to enjoy like Krishna, to be the master like Krishna, to be the friend of everyone like Krishna, maybe in the mode of goodness. But Krishna is Bhoktaram Jagatastapasam. He is the supreme enjoyer. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, he is the supreme owner. We can't possess anything. And he is the supreme friend, Suhridam Sarvadehinam. The conditioned want to imitate and be the supreme enjoyer. And therefore, they're enjoying in the wrong place. Prabhupada was asked in his room once, 1976, by Mike Robinson. He was working for London Radio at the time. What is the purpose of life? It's a question that people sometimes ask devotees. You know, they want to know, what's the purpose of life? What is the meaning of life? So Prabhupada instantly replied, the purpose of life is to enjoy. Everyone wants to enjoy. Sometimes Prabhupada would speak about how the hogs and the pigs would have great enjoyment, great fun and ecstasy by eating their abominable substances. And they really liked it. And human beings also, they enjoy sometimes abominable substances. I mean, it's not human to enjoy intoxication. It's not actually on the human platform. But it's so enjoyable that they have great, great fun. Even if it's painful the next day. I remember when I was in college, and it probably still is a common thing, that, you know, there would be the Friday and Saturday night binge. And to the point of practically being blind or almost numb and just, you know, totally, what do they call it, zoned out or something. And the next day, it's like torture to get up, and it's sick all morning. But weekend after weekend, the conditioned souls engage in the same activity because it's just irresistible. It's too much fun, and it's worth it. It's worth it to suffer the next day. That's the ethic. It's worth it to suffer the next day. So people in this material world generally believe that the process of enjoyment has concomitant suffering going along with it, and that the whole world is like that, and that anyone who thinks that there is no such, that there is some place, or that one doesn't have to suffer, is simply an illusion, is living in some kind of an ivory tower, or, you know, hoping to go back to heaven someday and live in the clouds where there's harps and lyres and angels singing and dancing, and it's not real, because there's suffering, and we have to take the concomitant suffering with misery, because that's the way life is. And if we don't think that that's what happiness is, then we're living a life of illusion. So the great desire of the sages to fulfill the desires of Krishna, that this causeless mercy is bestowed on them, is to give them some sense beyond what we can learn from our empirical knowledge, that there is something that we cannot learn. There's a column in the Times of India called Inner Space, and one of the people I was recently there was writing about Albert Einstein. And Prabhupada, I don't think he quoted him, he quoted Isaac Newton sometimes. But anyway, Einstein is thought to be one of these unusual people who had a very advanced brain and who made great advancements in science, sort of forged the way for atomic energy and all these things, who was essentially very humble and who thought that he was endowed somehow by some power. I don't know if he could articulate that it was exactly was God or in a personal form, but that he was endowed by some power that was unordinary. But he said that he thought that many other people had the same kind of mental agility that he had, and that the fact that he was being so revered in human society was very grotesque, that he felt that he owed, that he had a great obligation, not only to all the other intelligent people in the world, but all the intelligent and even unintelligent people in the world who he depended on for his well-being and happiness, who went before, even, who were long gone. So that's the symbol of humility in someone who senses that even though one may be very advanced materially and can speculate on the limits of the universe, that there is something even more unlimited, something even greater, something far beyond. And this is a sign, Prabhupada said, of real intelligence, to know that there is something beyond what we can see and do and hear, something so vastly greater that we can't even begin to perceive. The mental speculators are sometimes compared to people who are haunted by the ghost of knowledge. There's that story that Prabhupada narrates in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about the Sarvajna, the knower of all things. And the man came to him, he was looking for the buried treasure, the treasure of his father, whether he should dig on the south, west, north, or east side. And the west side was the side of mental speculation. If you dig on that side, if you try to obtain knowledge of the Supreme Lord by thinking, by just speculating, like all the great munis and philosophers do, instead of Mahajayena Gatasvapanta, instead of relying upon the wisdom of the Mahajans and following in their footsteps, trying to learn everything for oneself, one will be haunted, just like being possessed by ghosts. People who are possessed by ghosts just babble. They don't talk sense. They can't think properly. And yet, sometimes they think that they do. But this knowledge, this trying to acquire knowledge and be wise through the acquisition of knowledge of past philosophers and to come up with some new philosophy, this is just like that. It's an illusion. It's a thought that I've come up with something new, like the philosophers, like the existential philosophers. Each one of them, Nietzsche, Kierkegaard, they all thought, I've got something new. Descartes, it was all at that time, it was like revolutionary that they had discovered these new thoughts. I think, therefore I am, and so on and so forth. But they didn't think that there's some power beyond them. Only a very rare person in this material world realizes that there's something wrong about this, that this is a kind of form of being haunted or being possessed. It's not real, ultimate knowledge. So this is the ekapadvibhuti. People are trying to take shelter of such persons. And Prabhupada said that we can't actually take shelter of such persons. And he specifically cited philosophers, politicians, religionists, and psychologists as among those who are promising in many ways to give shelter to the conditioned souls, because they think that they've got a certain corner on the knowledge of the world. They think that they possess a certain amount that is capable of sheltering, of giving protection, or of ruling, or of soothing others and giving them solace, peace, and happiness. So the sages are saying there's no limit, and anyone who thinks that they know the limit is not proper or not is nonsensical. So as we were reading in the previous verse, one has to get the mercy of the Lord in order to understand that he is unlimited. So the water of the Ganges, the association with devotees, are very, very powerful. And it's also mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that getting the dust from the body or the feet of a devotee, the water washes the feet of the devotee, the remnants of the foodstuffs of a devotee, these are the most powerful substances in the world. Now, there's great talk about substance abuse. You get a substance, you get alcohol, you get some kind of intoxication, and try to get happiness from that thing. Try to squeeze out whatever happiness might be in there, tobacco or marijuana or whatever it might be. But the most powerful substance, and Prabhupada uses the word substance, is these three things. But that's the water and the remnants of a devotee. These are so powerful, we can't even imagine how powerful they are. You may have read something about Krishna Akinchana Krishnadas. Akinchana Krishnadas, one of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disciples, who's always chanting Hare Krishna, always getting association from the devotees. So one of the ways that he bestowed mercy, he's got a samadhi in Vrindavan. He's not unusual, one of the rank and file devotees. So much to learn from. He was always chanting Hare Krishna. Very learned. He was educated. He spoke Bengali and Sanskrit and English fluently. But he would never talk. He would only chant Hare Krishna, like, yeah, the whole mantra. And he would say to people when they tried to engage him in conversation, he would say, Hare Krishna, just like that. And he was always very happy and very jovial. So one day some of the other godbrothers of his, from the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj, they complained, this Krishnadas, Akinchana Krishnadas, he doesn't talk, he's educated, he just sings and he just just always chants Hare Krishna. He doesn't do any service. So I think you should have a word with him. Something's not proper. So Srila Bhakti Sananda Saraswati said, okay, I'll tell you what, we'll put an ad in the paper and we'll advertise that anyone who wants, we'll give them shelter, we'll give them food and clothing, they can come and stay with us, they can live with us, we'll take care of their needs. They just have to chant Hare Krishna. That's all they have to do. But they have to chant all day, nonstop, and then we'll give them all these things. So they placed such an ad in the paper, and only about two or three people answered. And those that answered came and could only stay for two or three days because they just couldn't do it. You know, they couldn't engage their minds and their brains and their tongues and their ears in chanting Hare Krishna 24 hours a day. So this vindicated Akinchana Krishna Das. He was always chanting, people complained, but he was the only one who actually could do it. So he was a very dear devotee to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And one of the amazing stories about him is that when he was in his sunset years, the last few months of his life, one of the Kavirajas or doctors came in to check him out and put a stethoscope up to his heart, and instead of hearing the usual lub-dub, lub-dub, he heard Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And this is confirmed by several people. One of my friends, a Prabhupada disciple, was spent some time living with him, and it's really true, he just chanted constantly the Hare Krishna mantra. So this is a way to get the mercy of the Lord, to associate constantly with Vaishnavas, to hear them, to always have the tongue decorated by the chanting of Hare Krishna. In this age especially, it's very, very important. Prabhupada had such great faith in the chanting of Hare Krishna mantra. I think this is in, you can read it in that book by Mahanidhi Swami, Prabhupada and Radha Damodar. When Prabhupada was talking about going to the West, he was saying that maybe, just maybe, I'll set up a hostel in America, that people will be so addicted to their bad habits, of especially meat eating, that even I will allow them to do that. Because I know if we propagate and make it a requirement that they have to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and they have to stay in this place, that if they just chant regularly, constantly, and they develop some faith, that all their bad habits will go away. So Prabhupada was actually convinced that even if they wouldn't give up their bad habits right away, but they lived in the association of devotees, and they heard from devotees, they would chant Hare Krishna, that the power of the mantra would dissipate all these bad habits. And another indication of his supreme faith in the chanting of the holy name was that he would continue, even though he was advised by so many people, don't go to America, you're too old, it's too cold, New York's too horrible. And even after he was on the ship and had heart attacks one after the other, he didn't flag, not an iota. But he had so much faith in the power of the holy name and his instructions of his Guru Maharaj, but especially he was always chanting Hare Krishna. Krishna came to him in a dream, saved him, rode the ship, that he would prevail, that the instructions of his spiritual master would prevail. So that is great faith in the holy name and a great faith in the mercy. Prabhupada was also very learned. He was always the top of his class. He was especially good in Sanskrit. No one could defeat him in argument. He had great knowledge of many things, even history. And once I was driving with him down Marylebone Road, and he said, this street, it's named after a woman, isn't it? And I didn't know. I didn't know of anyone named Marylebone. But he knew, Prabhupada knew, and I was completely ignorant. And he knows a great deal. He knew a great deal about British and American history. I remember when we were driving around sometimes, he would remember dates and times and places and names of people that we even forgot from our history classes. But Prabhupada was constantly praying for mercy. When he was living in Radha Damodar in those 6 years, he used to gaze out the window sometimes at the Samadhi of Rupa Goswami and pray for his mercy. He used to constantly pray to get the mercy of Rupa Goswami so that he could follow in his footsteps. So all of the great sages and all the great sages, saints, all the sadhus in our sampradaya, they were so great, they were so learned. Jiva Goswami, Sanatan Rupa, they were great scholars. Jiva Goswami, who is said to have written 500,000 verses in Sanskrit, even in London University, he was proclaimed as the greatest philosopher in modern history. They were constantly engaging in tapa. Sanatan was circumambulating Govardhana Hill, a big, long parikram, until very old age. He was hardly able to move, he was sort of hobbling around. So this is the way that he was getting the mercy of Govardhana. This is the way that all devotees try to get the mercy. And it's not only that the mercy is available from great sages, but Guru Shastra and Sadhu means that we get the mercy from everyone. It means that devotees, wherever they are, whatever shape or form, they're like desire trees. That's very hard to understand, how a so-called ordinary devotee can be a desire tree, can grant you anything you wish. But it's actually the case. I had one experience that was a little on this line. When I was living in San Diego, my roommate, he was not a devotee, but he was becoming a devotee, and then at a certain point he got initiated. And he was a very expert person in computer knowledge. He worked for a computer firm. And I never wanted to read the computer manuals, because I figured you might use 1% of what you read, and to wade through the whole manual and only use 1% was just a big waste of time. But this devotee, he would come in and set up all these systems for me. And I learned everything I needed to know about the computer just from this one person. I mean, everything. I knew more than most of my contemporaries who were operating with a computer. I had a complete system. He had it just tailor-made to what I wanted. So then I, at that point, realized that this devotee is like a desire tree. Here's this very complicated manual that could take hours and hours and days to read and try to understand and apply. And this devotee was just putting it to work, just like that, just quickly, very quickly, and I didn't have to read the book. So devotees are, you know, that's one sort of material way. Devotees are like desire trees. But spiritually, the dati, padigranati, guyama, ketri, prichati, were advised by Rupa Goswami to reveal our minds to others. And by revealing the mind to anyone, everyone is benefited. Everyone who is a devotee has some special realization. It's like you come to Bhagavatam class, you might hear someone who is a rookie in Krishna consciousness. But you take a pencil and a paper and you learn something. I mean, I know I do, and I think everybody here, I see, you know, you're taking notes, or you've got a computer there. You're learning something. I mean, everybody has something to say. And everyone has some realization that you can learn from that realization. It's the power of the vibration, the realization, that counts in Krishna consciousness. Everybody has realization. Something, some way the Krishna consciousness has meant something, means something to me. So even getting those words from the devotee, that's also another kind of mercy. Because ultimately it's Krishna's mercy, isn't it? It's coming through the sages, through the saints, through the gurus, the sadhus, through the shastra. But it's coming from the mouths of devotees. That's the meaning of getting the mercy. And that's actually one of the symptoms, of the six symptoms of sharanagati, of surrender, is to depend fully on the mercy of the Lord. To know that I can't do anything myself. I can't figure it out, how it works, myself. That's what the sages are saying. They want to bring everyone into the service of Krishna and get the mercy of Krishna. Now, as to how the people in the spiritual world forget Krishna, that's also very interesting. That's a different kind of forgetting. In the spiritual world, we have a spiritual body and we're able to remember all of our past lives. It's a very unique position. So the devotees in the spiritual world, they see Krishna, they think of Krishna, they have no other thought of Krishna, but they never see Krishna as material. They don't think of Krishna as the Bhoktarang Jagatapasam or the Sarvaloka Maheshwar. They don't see him as creating the universe, of being involved in the details of the material world, of the different expansions, of the different incarnations. They don't see Krishna in that form, but they see Krishna as their friend, they see Krishna as their lover, they see Krishna as their master. They see Krishna in this way. So still they don't claim to know Krishna, because in that relationship also, one cannot know the limits of the Supreme Lord. Yashoda has a very unique relationship with Krishna in that rasa, in that vatsalya rasa. She's thinking, unlike the Christian saying that God give me my daily bread, Prabhupada quoted once, if I don't give God his daily bread, he will die. So does that mean she doesn't know Krishna? Well, in a way it does. But she's actually thinking like that. Not God give me my daily bread, but vatsalya rasa, let me give God, Krishna, his daily bread or he will die. So she's thinking he will die. Of course Krishna doesn't die. But that's another way of not knowing Krishna, thinking he'll die. Of course he can't die. But being his mother, she's thinking that if I don't take care of him properly, he might die. He might get bitten by a snake. He might get burned by the fire. He might die. So in the spiritual world, because there is this, the deep rasas, they're not on reverence. They're the rasas in which I can have Krishna as my lover, my friend, my son, like this. Krishna becomes unknowable in that way too. So Krishna is always mysterious, whether he's in the spiritual world or he's enacting his pastimes in Vrindavan, in the material world. It's always mysterious, and no one can ever know who Krishna really is. And this is a sign of intelligence. One who depends on the mercy of Krishna and doesn't claim to know who he is always in a better position. So the sages pray, both worlds are bewildered by your different energies. Those who are in the spiritual world are absorbed in your loving service, forgetting themselves and you also. So one who is completely absorbed just thinks, I'm serving Krishna, I'm making him happy, I'm making him smile, and forgetting, like Mother Yashoda, that he was the ruler and creator of all these universes, that he was the sum and substance, that all the universes were contained within his mouth, forgetting that. So, as we were saying, those who are trying to be in this material world, they're not of the human category. And I think Prabhupada mentions this, if I can find it in one of the purports. Devotional service to the Lord, this is the purport to the 50th verse of this chapter. Devotional service to the Lord is the highest goal of life for every human being, and such devotional service begins by hearing about the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. Only an animal, or a man who is almost in animal behavior, can refuse to take an interest in hearing the transcendental message of the Lord. There are many books of stories and histories in the world, but except for the histories and narrations of the topics of the personality of Godhead, none are capable of diminishing the burden of material pangs. Therefore it is said, Gyatvamam Shantamrichati. The only way that peace can be obtained is to know individually and collectively that Krishna is the supreme friend, the supreme joy, and the supreme master of everything. So I'll read the verse again. Savai Bhata Vashta Matis Tavashyate Tavish. Vaishyate, yad karmanam param apara karmana, yad yogamaya guna yoga mohitam, vishvam samastam bhagavan videhiyam. Videhisham. O Lord, there is no limit to your wonderful activities. Anyone who desires to know the limit of your activities is certainly nonsensical. Everyone in this world is conditioned by the powerful mystic potencies. Please bestow your causeless mercy upon these conditioned souls. Srila Radha Gokula Nanda, Srila Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Sri Gornitai Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Yeah, even in these higher planetary systems, there's so much bewilderment. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Arvachana Arjuna. All places of misery, Prabhupada says. Everyone has to eventually leave the body. So these aren't permanent. Nothing is ultimately permanent. So any questions or comments? How is it at a Kinshana Krishna's Baba, he could chant all day? You mean he was allowed to chant all day? Or just that he was able to? Obviously he was no ordinary person. There are a number of Vaishnavas who have become famous after their demise from the material world. Their disappearance days are therefore celebrated. Tiro Bhava as opposed to our Bhava appearance days, because when they first come, people don't know, or they haven't established what their unique quality is when they come into the world. But through their life experience, the experience we have of them, and the way in which they lead the world, they become famous, and samadhis are erected, and we worship their feet, we celebrate there. There's a whole celebration that goes on for every disappearance day of all the great devotees. I mean, there's so many. We can read about them in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's like a tree with unlimited branches. There's so many. There's a festival that goes on pretty much every day in Vrindavan, and sometimes it's a three-day festival. And there's observances for these festivals. There's some that's done on the first day, and other things done on the second day. Usually they're glorified. And then there's a great feast and so on. But what makes it possible for anyone to have a unique ability, like writing so much as the Goswamis did, or living a very austere life, or living to be 140 like Jagannath Das Babaji, is very difficult to say. But one thing we know for certain is that the unique qualities that are the kind that we worship, or worship a bull, they're coming from the mercy of the Lord. No one actually could understand. He was one of the inscrutable great devotees that no one could really fully understand. This friend of mine who lived with him for some time, it was just a mystical experience to know how one person could not, just imagine what it's like to not speak. I knew one guy that he made a vow of silence, but he carried around a little chalkboard and a piece of chalk with him, because he couldn't do it, he just couldn't communicate with other people. So it's very mysterious. And this is part of the mercy of the Lord, that many mysterious and unknowable things are manifest. And this is what makes for the great mystery that is Krishna and the whole Krishna consciousness movement. I mean, even some of our own devotees, we can't understand how they can do such amazing, wonderful things. We can't. It's actually a mystical process. But the transformation of one from material life to spiritual life is also a miracle of sorts. So we can say it's a miracle. We don't know. It's mystical. No one can really say how it's possible to chant Hare Krishna 24 hours. I was instructed once by Srila Prabhupada to chant 64 rounds, and I just couldn't do it. So I didn't say anything. Then he said, well, you have to chant 32, and I still didn't say anything. Then he said, well, then at least chant 16. I said, oh yes, Prabhupada, I'll chant 16 rounds. But Haridas Thakur, who can understand how he could chant? No one could understand how he became the Acharya of the Holy Name. So these processes are definitely mystical. They're part of this phenomenon that's being discussed here, that's being mentioned, that we think we can know certain things, but other things we can never know. We can never, it is said that one can never understand a Vaishnava. Not by outward appearance or any other way. No one can pretend to understand the mind of a Vaishnava. It's always beyond our comprehension, because it's coming from the great master of all mystics, Yogeshwara Krishna, master of all mystics. So it's a shakti, achintya. It's inconceivable, achintya shakti. I mean, inconceivable in our state, put into words.
You said our demigods become bewildered. So I was wondering how they are actually devotees of the Lord and they given specific powers, responsibility. How did they forget in that position?
They are also not possessing of spiritual bodies. His question was how demigods sometimes forget they were given a position to execute on behalf of the Lord. But we find that even the most advanced demigods, Lord Indra and Lord Brahma, they become bewildered sometimes, or they want to play a trick on Krishna, or they think that they have more power than Krishna. Because there's some conditioning, there's some desire for some desire for material benefit or material life, in many, many cases. So this is the difference between a pure devotee. Sometimes Prahlad Maharaj is held up as the example of never seeing friends and enemies. That was one of his great prerogatives. Whereas those in the higher planetary systems are fearful that they may be, their power may be usurped by the very powerful demonic forces. There's very powerful demons in the other planetary systems. And sometimes they usurp, just like Hiranyakashipu was able to, he was a demon, but he was able to usurp the power of Indra. So they have to see in this kind of impure way, there's friends and enemies, there's the world of, they are our enemies. But a devotee doesn't see like that. He sees equally. Sometimes he sees the enemies become the friends and the friends become the enemies. But he doesn't see in terms of things like that. Sometimes he knows that my enemies are my best friends and my best friends are my enemies. My enemies tell me what's wrong with me and that's my benefit. My friends flatter me and that's very dangerous for me. But so that's the mood of a pure devotee. He doesn't see in terms of that. But Krishna is so merciful that if someone has a material desire, in some cases he allows them to fulfill that desire. And then later it becomes more merciful. Yasyaham anugranami harishe tadanam shanai. He takes even that away. And then that gives the devotee an opportunity for absolute purity. So this is what Prabhupada said we should strive for. Absolute purity, like the pure devotees, and pattern our lives after them, not the demigods. The demigods have administrative positions and powers, and there's a necessity for this in the universe. But the meditation of a Vaishnava is to become an unqualified and perfect servant of the Lord, unmotivated. Yes? Well, political is, I think it's from a Greek word that means people. Yeah, I mean, individuality in the world, which there always will be, and in the spiritual world, there will always be differences. Lord Kapila says that it's very important to cement relationships. Individuality in the world, which there always will be, and in the spiritual world, there will always be differences. Lord Kapila says that it's very important to cement relationships with devotees, and especially if they're like-minded, but you won't find that everyone is going to be your best friend. So it's important to take advice and learn from those who you consider more advanced than you are, and always take the position, Trinata Pisuni Chena, that I'm always in the lower position, I'm respecting others, I want no respect for myself. And this is the secret of success as a devotee, because there's always in the material world there must be conflict. When Prabhupada was talking to his godbrother, O.B.L. Kapoor, he said that the way I'm going to be successful with Krishna consciousness is that my secret formula is this third verse in Shikshastaka. This is my secret formula. And Kapoor told us this, Dr. Kapoor. So if you maintain this, Lord Chaitanya taught it, and it is said that one should wear it around the neck like a garland, then the differences, although they must always be there, can be sublimated to the more important and more essential task of creating preaching teams. Or ISKCON, we can say, is the big preaching team, or the big boat, the big vehicle. So it is not easy to remain a devotee in some ways, because we're always accountable, we're always being measured, we have to report to somebody. That's Prabhupada's system. And in doing this, one has to learn how to gradually set aside the differences that we have with others and work for a higher cause, knowing that not everyone is going to be the best friend, but we should try to worship all the Vaishnavas as best we can. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.